Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Yes, at the time of the morning, where we join Member of Parliament Ahmad Mandur Sheikh Imam, the leader of the NFP, on Parliament Tunes. Ahmad, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you doing? And Brother Haruna from London tells me, Brother Shafaz, we're paying 40 rands a litre. 40 rands a litre for diesel there in the UK. And what we're paying. Ahmad, how are you this beautiful morning?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, your beautiful day in the city of Cape Town. Still recovering though from my, whether it's the flu or I'm not sure what it really is. But yeah, there's a whole lot that's taking place currently in the country and abroad. I think you're aware of the assassination attempt on our brother Imran Khan. And I'm told that there were 4 shots fired at him. And, of course, he is blaming the attack, the assassination attempt solely on some of the leaders in his country. But, you know, it doesn't augur well for Pakistani politics. Clearly, they are already facing an economic crisis in that country. But it clearly indicates that when you can't beat somebody, then you want to remove them, you know. Even in South Africa, we've had another murder of another councillor, and I think he's the deputy chairperson in the ANC in the Mpumalanga region that was gunned down. But it seems to become a norm in politics that if you can't match them, you can't beat them, then you remove them completely. It's very unfortunate because, you know, we should not go to that extent if we all have a common purpose. There's a concern being raised about vaping and in schools, and there appears to be a considerable increase in the number of learners that are taking up vaping. And experts, and particularly health experts, are raising concerns about this. Look at what has happened in Eitzach in the Western Cape Town school. This school was vandalized. It is now standing, I think, just about on its foundation. Over a 6-month period, brick by brick, that's the way they explain it, has been taken away, left with nothing, absolutely nothing. And this is in full view of the community as well. So community, I think they forget that they also have a role to play, that they own these, you know, schools and other facilities that has been created there. Surely they would have been observing who has been actually doing this and who hasn't. You know, who are the culprits and things. And so I don't think we're getting enough of a buy-in. A very unfortunate incident at O.R. Tambo, not the first. It's happened to at least 300 women previously wearing a headgear and subject to the kind of, unlawful or embarrassing situation of being searched and things. And it would appear that our Muslim women are being targeted. And I can tell you that this appears to be a norm. It seems like it's a policy. I have released a media statement, but over and above that, I have called through a motion without notice for some investigation into this and the conduct and what is their policy as far as this is concerned at the O.R. Tambo Airport. The kidnapped girl, I'm not sure if there's any latest development this morning, but as at yesterday, I'm told the child remains, kidnapped, Pakistani child in Gatesville in Cape Town that was taken away just, you know, about to go to school. And you can see that the rise in kidnappings in the country, particularly if you notice, Brother Shafaz, amongst the Bangladeshis and the Pakistani communities. And to a very large extent, it appears to be that it is the own Pakistani and Bangladeshi community in many instances are part and parcel of these things or colluding with criminals, local criminals as well. So it's quite a frightening situation as far as, you know, these kidnappings are concerned, and innocent children are becoming victims of this.
Yeah, Ahmad, you know, you make a lot of points, and actually Imran Khan has declared jihad on the present government of Pakistan. So, you know, Allah make it easy for him, and inshallah, let's hope truth prevails and falsehood perishes. Here in this country, as we say, we have so much of issues with criminality and many other things coming to the fore, and then, you know, Cyril Ramaphosa, even Moshranchle and many previous presidents are telling him, come clean about the Pala Pala and so forth. But talking about getting clean with Pala Pala, his pal, 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 his brother-in-law, Patrick Motsepe, he wants, the ANC wants him to stand as the president. I mean, what's going on here? Who's calling on Patrice to become the president? He's someone that's been captured by, you know, this so-called conglomerates of this world. He could be one of them that will do the bidding on their behalf, like many alleged happened to Cyril Ramaphosa. What are your thoughts on that, Ahmad?
Well, clearly the ANC of today is not the ANC of yesteryear. They have the vision that the ANC of Oliver Tambo and things, and the ANC we have today of Cyril Ramaphosa, their focus of attention is the capitalist system. It's all about profits. It's not about the people on the ground. I think it ended with former President Jacob Zuma, despite all the concerns or the corruption and things that took place during his time. But I think we are moving away from concentrating on the upliftment of the people on the ground, but more to a capitalist system. I'm not surprised that they will call for Motsepe, because perhaps it's a process that they're putting in place that after Cyril Ramaphosa they could bring him in, or if Cyril Ramaphosa for some reason or the other does not finish his term, then they could bring in Patrice Motsepe. But, you know, I don't know, sometimes people believe that if, you know, and yes, I think to some extent you need to run your country like a business. And I think the president himself, though, the current president has, I think to some extent his concentration appears to have shifted away from the people on the ground. And that is the fear, that if you continue with the capitalist system, and history will tell us that from all over the world, you might have some kind of economic growth and things, but ultimately the poorest of the poor will become poorer by the day. And the gap between the rich and the poor will increase, because your focus of attention will be on the rich and the middle class and things. There is no reason why we can't have a mix of that. But unfortunately, somebody has to pay the price for somebody to become rich. And it's more often than not, it's the poorest of the poor that tend to do that, suffer the consequences. So, you know, the issue of them bringing Patrice Motsepe, I'm not sure whether he's got ANC membership for starters, you know. But be that as it may, you know, when there's factions involved in politics, they tend to not necessarily try to identify those that they believe will do the right thing. But because of the divide and rule policy people, you know, want to introduce. And in this case, they believe that if Cyril has to go, and all indications are currently with the pressure that's being put on, he's going to have a very difficult next 5 years if he gets elected. So they're setting the platform already to have somebody of their own from that particular faction, the CR faction, to replace him. Again, you know, like the RET faction will want to put somebody there to protect Jacob Zuma and them from all the allegations, you'll need a guy like Patrice Motsepe to come there and protect Cyril Ramaphosa if he's found guilty as well. So you can see what it is all about. It's certainly not about the interest of the people on the ground. But certainly the RET faction will not be the one that will call for Patrice Motsepe. It will be the one from the CR campaign that will perhaps call for him to be the one to take them further if anything does go wrong in the presidency of Andres Ramaphosa.
Well, I got a message here from my brother. He says that, please, Brother Shafat, don't mention my name, but tell Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam, doom and gloom has spread over the country. We approach our loss to Netherlands this morning. It seems as if they have opened the way for Pakistan to come into. He's referring to the cricket, Ahmad. He's referring, because what happened to South Africa? Chokers. The Proteas are chokers, Ahmad. Talk to us, Ahmad. What do you think of these guys choking?
Yeah, I think the country is going through a very difficult time. There's no doubt about it. And with all the allegations of looting and corruption and maladministration, your energy crisis, your water crisis, your anticipated fuel crisis, your infrastructure crumbling, I think South Africa is at its lowest. I don't know how much lower it can get into this. And of course, now with the Proteas succumbing to the Netherlands, can you believe it? Now, where from here? Where from here? Exactly where from here? So I can and understand the sentiments of the brother. Very disappointing. I'm not sure whether they were overconfident or what. But clearly it indicates that, where are those days when South Africans, the World Cup cricket, World Cup rugby, African Cup of Nations, where are those days when we had some of the finest athletic swimmers that brought us, made us proud and brought gold medal? Where is it really? Where are we now having them in isolated incidents? And I think we have, South Africa has talent. South Africa has capable people to take South Africa forward. But clearly, if you look at the attitude and the arrogance of politicians and political parties, it is it doesn't augur well for the future of the country, because like the ANC always believes, no matter what you can tell them, they believe that they know it all. So with that attitude that you have, and they come up with things, Brother Shafat, but they will apply their minds to it. They will discuss it among in isolation as an ANC, not even try and get the opinions of other political parties and experts, come up with certain things, and only to realize 5 years or 10 years down the line. I was watching somebody, a video of a guy who says that he believes he is one of those that knows a lot. In fact, more than most people when it comes to the energy. And he says you're going to need 1.7 trillion to solve the problem. Nothing less than 10 years. Talks about bringing in expertise and skills from outside because we don't have it anymore. Now you raise that with the ANC and they'll say, no, they know it all. They will laugh it off. But the fact of the matter is this. There are people out there who have the solutions to all the problems that we have in the country. But when you have arrogance to the extent you do, like in the ANC and things of that nature, you're not going to go forward, until, of course, you bring them to their knees, you let them lose the elections. But to lose that elections too is not necessarily the solution right now. They need to lose decisively, meaning that they must lose to the extent that they will not be able to use the smaller political parties to maintain that control and power over the country. And that might not happen in the next election, perhaps in the following one. All indications are that they might not make the 50% mark in this one. But that doesn't mean they won't maintain control. You can see what is happening in Gauteng, Tshwane, all those areas, those municipalities. You can see what's happening in many other local governments where they are losing support, but still maintain control through coalitions with smaller parties and things. And those things, those coalitions are not working for South Africa at the moment. It's only jostling for power and control. And of course, it's all about controlling the resources of these institutions or structures all over. So, you know, the doom and gloom our brother is talking about, you know, the concern is that how much worse can it get before it starts improving? And I can tell you that if you're heading in this direction, Brother Shepherd, eventually you will find that it is parties like the DA, the Freedom Front and things, will start gaining support, and South Africa may have to go back to where we came from.
The wheel at work, and also, you know, you look at Europe will be freezing. Yeah, they will be freezing. No gas, no heat, no energy, no nothing. Why? Because of Ukraine. What happened in Ukraine? A proxy war being fought on behalf of the United States of A. I don't know, you can use the term for anything you like, people. But this is what's happening. They are, the Biden and his company and all those that were with him have been deceived or lured into a war that is going to bite them. Frostbite, this bite, that bite, and they blame it on one person called Putin. And Putin, while Russia has food, Russia has gas, Russia has energy, the people are well fed. On the other hand, those that are perpetrating this, they are being, yes, slowly but surely, they are feeling the bite, they're feeling the pinch, they're feeling everything. Your thoughts, Ahmad?
Yeah, well, clearly the sanctions that they impose is failing. There's no doubt that's the price they are paying. But ultimately, who pays the price? It's the people on the ground. If you look at now in Europe, the people on the ground are going to pay the ultimate price. I think you've started off by telling us the price of fuel, the one brother has highlighted. Now, these are some of the things the people on the ground will have to go through. If you look at the high food prices, gas prices, fuel prices, you know, it's the people on the ground that have to suffer. And until such time, people realize that the United States is no good, that it is the perpetrator of all the violence, the mayhem, and the chaos all over the world, and start distancing themselves from the United States of America and create an opposition, you know, that is ethical, that maintains high levels of morality, do not interfere in the affairs of other states. You will continue to, the people on the ground will continue to suffer the consequences of what is going on. But I'm glad to some extent that the United States of America is downsizing. You know, they are being brought down, and now that, you know, many of them are wanting to do away with the U.S. dollar, that's a step in the right direction. I hope the African continent will also realize that and have its own currency as well. It's a shame that the African continent can't even have its own currency, despite all the wealth and the resources that the African continent has. They're in control of nothing. The West controls everything. And so I just hope that, you know, it's also a wake-up call for African countries, you know, to take advantage of the fact that the United States now is meeting its match. So, you know, I think it might be the beginning of the end of the U.S. dollar, but more importantly, you know, that power and control and that status that the United States enjoyed, I think you can feel it slightly, you know, it's beginning to crumble a little bit. And I think they need to accelerate the pace with which they want to achieve that and bring the United States down to its knees. If you can do that, United States and its allies, then of course I think you'll have a better world, a more peaceful world, a more secure world. You know, I've said it before again and again, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has blessed every nation in the world with something that they could survive on, something different, so that you could share, you could barter and live peacefully. And yet you take all what you got and you give it to somebody else to control it, you become totally dependent on them. And so maybe it's a learning exercise for our people. And I'm glad that some of the countries have decided to stand up to them.
Yeah, Ahmad, I'm looking at a message here, and it's from Umar says, Assalamu alaikum, Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam. Hope you get better soon. I can hear it from your voice. But don't let yourself go down, my man. You're a man of truth and Allah will make you better soon. And don't forget to take a nazar on you because a lot of eyes on you. Okay, Ahmad, don't forget that also. And he goes on to say, I want to tell you, Ahmad, that Europe is fork tongue. They always support those that are oppressing others. And if you look at the Palestinian issues, when last did you hear Europe making a collective voice, stand in a collective voice and condemn Israel? Never, never will they do that. They are always for Europe, either of Eastern European descent or Western European. Europeans or Europe cannot be trusted. Please, Ahmad, conscientize the people. Don't trust Europe and Europeans. How do you respond to Umar there, Ahmad?
I think brother is absolutely correct. We know through history the Europeans and the role that they have played, and he's correct. You never come out and find them condemning Israel for its atrocities against the Palestinian people. And more often than not, you find that they collude with particularly the United States of America. And of course, that's why they're also paying the price right now. It's very unfortunate that the people on the ground, innocent people, have to eventually pay the ultimate price. But remember, until you change the policies of these nations, these states, you're not going to get it, you're not going to get them to change direction and maintain high levels of morality and principles and ethics, because it's a policy matter. You know, some of these are controlled by the Zionists to dictate to them. And let us not forget the role that Europe played in the creation of Israel and an Israeli state. Israel just didn't pitch up there and end up, you know, being called Israel. It was Europe that had everything to do with creating this European, this Israeli state on Palestinian land. And despite that, the undertaking that it will equally protect the Palestinian people, they failed to do that as well. But why did they do that? They also did that because the Zionists, you were becoming a threat to them. And that is why, in order to prevent the threat in Europe, they decided to get them to go and settle in Palestinian land and create the state of Israel. So that is basically what they did, and we must not forget that. So the Europeans will never, in my view, come right unless they change their policy direction. But who knows, inshallah, one day Europe will be under the control of the Ummah. Not that the Ummah themselves are, you know, acting in the best interest of its fellow brothers and sisters these days. As we know, many of our countries are colluding with the West and Europe and with the United States. But we hope sanity will prevail someday, that they will be able to see the light and do the right thing and protect the Ummah and Muslim countries all over the world, particularly, so that we could go back to our origin and do what is right and create a better society for all our people to live in.
Yeah, Ahmad, you know, you look at Turkey now. Turkey is screaming and crying. We want to be part of the European Union. They've been telling them a long time, come on, accept us. America, by the way, have been said, no, you should accept Turkey. They're fighting on behalf of Turkey. But the European Union, they're just using Turkey to do the dirty work. You know, you can see where the sentiments are, Ahmad.
Indeed, and like the brother correctly alluded to, that you cannot trust Europe. Clearly you cannot. And if you go back into history books, they have never changed. They will never change, no matter what happens. Together with the United States of America, these two groupings, I think, are a menace to society. And they want absolute control.
Absolutely, Ahmed. And then you look at the Palestinian Prime Minister, Mohammed Isha Ishtaya. Yeah, I hope I got your name right. Ishtaya. He says that the Israeli military occupation of the Palestinian territories must end, and the Palestinians won't accept a more collective punishment. I mean, here we're hearing this. The same old story. You hear Mahmoud Abbas, same old story, the same old story. And guess who's back, Ahmed? Benjamin Netanyahu is back. They say a black cat. You know, when you see a black cat, this is a myth. It's bad luck. It's crossing the road. But the black cat is back. The Zionist cat is back. And this, once again, you can see that, you know, the dregs of society are in position of power. Your thoughts, Ahmed?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot more difficult knowing the Benjamin Netanyahu and his stance and his arrogance and his attitude towards this. But again, Brother Shafat, you know, I believe that we have what it takes to liberate our people in Palestine. And it's unfortunate that, you know, and yes, we pay a lot of attention to Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli government and things. But we forget that it is some of our own Muslim brothers and sisters that are in, that have so much to offer, that also collude with these people. And that is what makes the situation very difficult for the Palestinian people. If they could all stand and speak with one voice against the atrocities created, caused by the Israelis, I think it will go a long way in being able to achieve a Palestinian state and peace for the Palestinian people. And that is not happening. And, you know, whether it is for fear of Israel and the West that they do that they collude with them and things, we don't know. But clearly what it means is that until such time that we understand where our priorities lie, it's going to make it difficult for the Palestinian people. But I can assure you that they will get freedom, you know, and it will come. It has to come. It must come. It's just a matter of time, then our Palestinian people will be free. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, Ahmed, I know when you talk about snakes, you get the jeepies, creepies. But listen to this, Ahmed. 8-year-old Indian boy bites a snake to death in self-defense. And this happened in India, in the Pandarpat village in Jashpur. And it says the boy, identified only as Deepak, was playing in the backyard of his house when the snake wrapped itself around his hand and bit him. And citing a quote by the News Indian Daily Express, the boy said that he had been in a great deal of pain, and he said he had tried to shake his hand so that the snake would go off, but when it didn't budge, I bit it hard twice. It all happened in a flash, he said. It was reported, and the boy, he bit the snake. He bit a cobra, and he saved himself. Ahmed, your thoughts on that, lighty?
Wow, this is what a very remarkable story. I think it's you one in a billion story, isn't it? I haven't heard of any of particularly biting a cobra and getting away with it. But clearly, you know, he must have been in so much of pain fighting for his life. There was no option here. There, I must have been very brave to have actually done that. But of course, you know, it's a message, I think, to also to people that sometimes we think that these snakes and things, of course, you more often than not, people give up. And they believe when you confronted with this, well, that's it, it's the end. But, you know, if you fight back, and there it is, an ideal example, he did not give up. And he decided, let's try this, and it worked for him. MashaAllah, I think it's, how can I say it? I think, you know, his life, in this case, depended on him. It was either he dies and the snake survives, or he bites, and he chose to do that, you know. And I don't think I'd be able to do that. I don't think most of us will even consider doing that, to be honest with you. I don't even think he, perhaps, Brother Shepherd, even gave it a thought. I don't think he even had time to think. He just, you know, decided to react, and for him, fortunately, it worked.
You know, Ahmed, a brave knight indeed, because he was bitten by the snake, and it was reported that the family rushed him to a nearby primary health center after that, when anti-snake venom was administered, and he was later discharged after remaining under observation. But, you know, immediately the family knew, hey, there's it, the lighty bit the snake, and the snake bit him, but he had to be rushed to the hospital, and there is he, mashallah, doing well. Quite a positive note that, Ahmed. Your parting words this morning?
It's a very strange story, though, because also when you put this venomous snake, it has so many questions unanswered here. But an interesting story, and I'm glad that he survived in any way. Brother Shafat, there's a message out there for people with keyless cars. I'm told that there's quite a considerable increase in the theft of motor vehicles that have keyless cars, where you don't need a key to actually start the cars. In terms of hijacking, it's about 4%, and the theft has gone up by 7%. Again, you know, you need to be very, very careful when you are... in fact, I'm told that, you know, they pick up that signal just by you having the keys in your pocket and things. And so you've got to be very, very careful in terms of visibility of the keys when you have them in your pocket or you're walking around them close to your vehicle and you have these criminals around there. But very importantly, you also need to make sure that your vehicles are locked, check the handles and whatever it is. But the concern here, I think, is this. It's not necessarily what we said before, which was remote jamming. Here it is about your keys being either in your pocket or in your pouch or in your wallet, whatever, but in close proximity to the vehicle and where the criminals are, and that's how they apparently are either hijacking or stealing your motor vehicles. You know, you know, these criminals have become so sophisticated, Brother Shafer, that they're moving so ahead or fast in technology. It's difficult to sometimes keep pace with these people. Now it means you're going to have to hide these your keys if you have a, you know, keyless vehicle. But again, you know, it's a measure that you're going to have to put in place if you look at the rise in these car thefts and the car hijacking as a result of that.
Yes, Ahmed, Jazakallah khair for being with us. Perhaps wrap your keys in foil. Yeah, they can't unjam it and so forth. Ahmed, we have a mashallah beautiful day ahead. We'll talk to you soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.